Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello, and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with Chris Clarkson about his new children's picture books, Where Did Benjamin Go? And Chloe and the Fireflies. We'll also revisit my conversation with Tim Alice about his book, Henry Bendel and the Worlds He Fashioned. Chris Clarkson is a Maryland native who moved to New Orleans 8 years ago. His first novel for young adults was That Summer Night on Frenchman Street, a charming introduction to the city. Now he's back with two picture books, Where Did Benjamin Go? And Chloe and the Fireflies, showing a new dimension to his talents. Chris Clarkson, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me again, Susan. It is a pleasure to be here.
So what was it like to make this transition to picture books?
It was actually really easy, surprisingly. Even in my young adult books, I've always had children in them. I have 6 nephews and a niece.
Oh, you have test readers.
Yes. So I have a lot of children that are around me. And whenever I create, I always think about starting from the beginning, and that's with childhood. Mm-hmm. So even in That Summer Night on Frenchman Street, as I was writing about teenagers, I started from the beginning. So I thought about young Tennessee and young Jesmyn and how they got to where they are now.
One of the things I admire about these books is that they're issue-driven, but they never beat the reader over the head with it. And the first one is such a painful situation. It's about a young boy named Charlie grieving the loss of his brother Benjamin. Where did Benjamin go? And his parents come up with a way to help him.
Yes. So when I was thinking about Where Did Benjamin Go, this was at the height of COVID. That's when I was writing it. And there so much death happening. And a lot of the conversations I would have, like with my twin sister, I would think about how she was explaining this to my nephews and my niece. And I just wanted to make sure that when I was writing that, it opened up the door about how to have these conversations. Because losing a brother, losing a family member, losing anyone is so traumatic for a childhood. So I didn't want to make sure to focus on that issue as much in the sense of like beating them over the head. I wanted parents to be able to open that door in whatever gentle way they needed to talk about what was happening in the world or what's happening in the lives of their kids.
And concentrate on joy.
Yes. I always want to concentrate on joy. Even when I'm writing something serious, it's so important to have some light because the world needs light and
yes.
I need light. And so I will make sure with whatever I write, even if that is a hard topic like losing your brother, I'm going to make sure that there's joy because Benjamin was here. Charlie's memories are forever here and no one can take that away from him.
Well, talk about the illustrations. When you write a children's book, I know somebody once said a picture book should be a perfect poem. You know, so there's a lot of responsibility on the text. But it's a shared creation.
Yes. So when I'm creating, I write all of like the words, and I will write the art notes as well. But from there, the illustrator for Where Did Benjamin Go, Annalise, she took control of the art. She is an artist. So what she does, I can't bring to life. I can just give the words and like, this is what could be happening on the page. But no matter what I write of what could be happening on the page, Annalise, Julie, they bring it together. And looking at it for the first time is where the magic for me truly comes in. Because these are my words, but they're fully in color and they're brought to life. And That's what kids see. They hear the words, but it's the pictures. It is the art that they're seeing, the bright colors, the expression.
This could be a charming little film, too. I'm sure you thought of that.
I always think of film, right?
So what happened when you tested this story on your nephews and nieces?
So for Where Did Benjamin Go? I actually got to sit and watch my twin sister read it to two of my nephews. And to watch their faces, like they were running around up until Cherie sat down and started reading it to them. And they stopped and they were just quiet. They were pointing at the pictures. And then she asked them afterward, well, what do you think happened to Charlie's brother? And it was so interesting to see what they thought happened. Mm-hmm. Because one, they thought that Benjamin had gone to college. And one of my nephews did think that Benjamin may have passed away. But that was also a kind of a goal of mine, mm-hmm. because loss can happen in so
in many,
many
ways.
Like if you have a brother or a sister or a sibling go off to college, that is still a loss. There's still grief that comes because they're not in that house anymore. So I wanted to leave it open, even though this is a book about losing a brother. And I know that Benjamin passed away. I wanted parents to be able to approach grief or loss from whatever standpoint. And seeing my twin read it to mm-hmm. my nephews really kind of made me feel good to see, you know, the questions that came up.
Oh, that's terrific. It's such an act of trust to give your story over to an artist, though.
It is. It is. It was with Where Did Benjamin Go? That was the first time that I had the experience. I love art. I'm not an artist. I could never.
I can't draw a thing myself. I know what you mean.
I can draw some rough sketches. That's about it. But it was such a joy to see what Julie and Annalise did. And that, once again, was really the magic for me. And I did get to see their art mm-hmm. before. My editor, Courtney, she had sent me the portfolio of several artists. And so I did get to choose which artists I really wanted to work with. And thankfully, both Annalise and Julie wanted to work with me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I had an idea of kind of what their art style looked like. With Annalise, what I loved the most was just the emotion that was captured in her art. And with Julie, it was the emotion as well, but there was something so fun about her art, something mm-hmm. so light and so colorful. Her art was, there was a lot of pastels in Chloe and the Fireflies. And for me, like, I'm a full grown adult, but just like looking at the pictures, like it was so fun to look at it.
Yeah, Chloe and the Fireflies, it's another book that's issue driven. It's about finding a forever home for a foster kid. And I have to tell you that I saw all these news stories about how last year was a great year for fireflies.
Really?
And they were back. And there were lots of them. So I congratulate you on your
timing. Thank you. I'm glad I helped to bring the fireflies to, you know, light up the skies a little, light up the night a little bit more.
So, and way to put Mother Nature into book marketing.
I love Mother Nature.
I'm
I love
good.
Fireflies. So.
Yep. So talk about the origins of what made you turn to this issue.
Yes. So one day, if I have a kid, I would like to adopt. And mm-hmm. I was thinking about that, but I was also thinking about my childhood. And I was thinking that I was raised in Virginia. My mom and dad, they were new to Virginia, to Portsmouth, actually. They were new mm-hmm. there. And my neighbor across the street, who I have always considered my grandma, she's not related to us by blood. Her name is Mabel, but she saw us. She saw my mom with her two twins, her two babies.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm going to help you take care of them. And she did. So Mabel adopted us. And whenever my mom was at work, she's a registered nurse. So she was working often. And we were always at Mabel's house. And growing up at Mabel's house was the safest environment. That's where I would sit and I would write my books. That's where I was able to just be a kid. There were no expectations placed on me. My twin and my cousin, like if they were playing like with dolls, Mabel did not care if I just picked up a doll and played too. She just let me be a kid. And I feel that I am adjusted because of my mom and, you know, how I was mm-hmm. raised, but also very much because Mabel created that safe environment. And that's what I was thinking about with Chloe, about a kid that just gets to be in a space where they feel loved,
yep.
they feel supported, they have this structure And this is a home. This is their home. And they're not just one of others. Chloe is Chloe.
Yes. And loved for who she is.
Exactly.
The other thing about your approach in these books is that you start off right in the middle of the action. At the beginning of Where Did Benjamin Go? Charlie is grieving.
Right.
At the beginning of Chloe and the Fireflies, Chloe catches that firefly right. So you're right in the middle of it.
Right. Part of it is because there's only so much story that I can tell. And also, I want to get to the point where it's the most pivotal. Like, What is setting up the story? What is this about? And so for Benjamin, grieving the loss of his brother, that's where it picks up. At that point, we don't know how long Benjamin has been gone, but we do know that Charlie is starting to understand that something is not quite right. Like, where did Benjamin go? And so I knew that I wanted to tell the story about how we can find light, how his parents can get together and provide this safe space where they can all remember their brother, their son, and just fill all of these pages with love.
Yeah.
And so that's why I had to start there for Where Did Benjamin Go? For Chloe, I wanted her to be in that safe space already. I did not want her to be unsure and, you know, in other homes where she felt unsafe. And so I put her right in this environment where she has two dads that want her to be there, that love her, that will support her, and just will bring her joy. Like, she can flourish in this environment. Mm-hmm. And that's where I wanted to start for Chloe and the Fireflies.
And it all leads up to that great moment.
Yes.
I love it.
Her forever home.
I think someday somebody will read all your books and they'll go, he filled all the pages with love. There you go.
Susan, I hope so. I hope so. Everything that I write, I do touch on a lot of heavier subjects, but I touch on those subjects because there have been things in my life that have been heavy. There are things in everyone's life that are heavy. And even though there are heavy things that are going on, I want to say, look, here is some light. So look at what this character is going through and look at how they got to the light, whether it's friends, whether it's themselves. And for me, whatever I write, that's always going to be my goal, to show some light and show some hope and create a path where the readers can hopefully feel a little bit better after walking away.
So having done these picture books now and the YA book, has this made you feel differently about what you want to do next?
Honestly, I am all over the place creatively. That is what I love the most about creation. I have so many ideas that are in my head. Creating means I can just jump into any world, any place, any character. I might just see a billboard and I might think, what if I wrote a story about that? Mm-hmm. And then I'll start writing a story. So I just want to create. I wrote a romance novel with one of my good friends, Laura. So
what fun.
Yes. So I just like to have fun too. Like whatever comes into my mind, I'm going to try to write it. I mean, my agent has to be able to sell it, but.
So do you want to talk about your next project?
Well, the last time I was here, I told you about this book, Postcards to Mercury. And I finished it in 2023. And it is still in that submission, waiting, that pile of wanting that one editor to pick it up. But that is honestly my favorite book that I've ever written.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yes,
I can't wait.
My favorite book. It deals with issues of mental health. There is a gay triangle, but it doesn't focus on the queer aspect. My main character, Ethan, he just gets to be a normal kid. And the fact that he's gay is just a background. It is just normal.
The way it should be.
Yes. And his sister goes missing at the very beginning of the book. And he is kind of torn because he has always performed his whole life. He has performed because his mother has these expectations. You should go to the same school as I went to. You should go to the same college. His sister rebelled against those expectations, but he went right into it, which means he kind of lost his identity. And throughout that book, while he's missing his sister, while he's preparing for, they're supposed to swim the English Channel after he graduates, he's also having these nightmares about what could have happened to her. So I've really loved loved writing that book.
Anytime you're writing dreams, even if they're nightmares, it's always fun.
It's always fun because you get, even if the book is set in the real world, you get to, you know, take that little nightmare scape a little bit and it can become a little fantasy-like and you don't have to explain it because it's a dream.
I wish people could see how happy you are when you talk about your work.
Ugh. Yeah. I can't stop grinning.
I know. It's a really glorious thing. Well, we've been talking with Chris Clarkson, whose new picture books are Where Did Benjamin Go? And Chloe and the Fireflies. Chris, thanks so much for bringing all this light out to UNO.
Thank you so much, Susan, for having me. It's always a pleasure to see you.
You too.
Thank you.
I am so happy to welcome Lafayette native Tim Alice to The Reading Life. Tim was a senior editor at InStyle for 12 years, and before that, he was a staff writer at People and in Dallas at D Magazine. For his first book, Henry Bendel and the Worlds He Fashioned, Tim takes as his subject the tastemaker Henry Bendel. He chronicles Bendel's journey from Lafayette to New York and the beautiful jewel box of a store that endured in various incarnations for 123 years. It is part biography, part art book, pure pleasure. Tim Alice, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, Henry Bendel is a name you knew growing up in Lafayette, but you didn't exactly know the full dimensions of this man.
Right. I knew the name only because I grew up in a subdivision called Bendel Gardens in Lafayette, and that was adjacent to Bendel Road. And so it was just, Henry Bendel was just a name. And I can't pinpoint when it was that I actually understood that this was a man who had a famous women's clothing store in New York City. And when I did learn that, let's say maybe when I was in my 20s, it didn't have particular resonance. I started visiting New York in my late teens, early 20s. Bendel's only sold women's clothing. I never went into the 57th Street shop. And I don't know when it was that I realized, oh, our subdivision is named for that guy. Mm-hmm. And then figuring out what a big deal he was.
So what was the connection you felt with him finally that would lead you to spend years on this project?
Well, I lightly researched Henry for a while, and then I did deeper research, and then I put it down for years. The final thrust of writing the book and doing some more deep digging was about a 2.5 year thing with another year for photo acquisition and editing and working on end notes and all the kind of fluff and fold. But I stuck with it because it kept nagging at me that there should be some light on Henry, that he's a lost figure who was just really quite famous in his day and then all but forgotten. And what was striking to me was that people in Lafayette knew little or nothing about who he was, even if many people in town knew the name and a few knew that he was the New York clothier. And then people in New York didn't know who he was. People in the fashion world didn't know. People who worked in fashion retail. And here's an anecdote for you. I met on the street one day the late film director Joel Schumacher, mm-hmm. and I knew that he had started out his career as a window dresser at Bendel's in the early 60s. And I had a wonderful chat with him on the street, and he was very intrigued that I was pursuing this, but he knew absolutely nothing about Henry Bendel, the man. And so that made me kind of rewind the clock and realize that even as far back as the 1960s, people in the company didn't really know much about Henry himself, who died in 1936.
Now, the arc of his life is so astounding. He grew up in one of those complicated Southern Jewish families. He learned the dry goods business in the South before going to New York. I love it that there was an opera house above a dry goods store, too.
Yes, yes. And you have to put opera house in quotation marks a little bit, because I think it could be anything. It was everything from family productions to traveling shows and, all sorts of, fate au dos or whatever went on up there. And it wasn't an elaborate, like we picture a formal opera house. It was a hall, a music hall, I think.
And he had quite an ecumenical background. He was Jewish, but he went to Catholic school, and he later became an Episcopalian.
Yes. He was raised in the Hebrew faith, and his parents sent him to St. Charles College in Grand Coteau, Louisiana, which is about half an hour outside of Lafayette. And that was really more of what we would think of as a high school or, a transitional school. This was going to complete his education, even though he was leaving. He left there, graduated there at like age 16. But it was a Jesuit-run school. So however much he may have been exposed to, say, Catholicism, which is so dominant in South Louisiana, earlier than that, I don't know. But for sure, he was getting the Jesuit version at Grand Coteau. And part and parcel of that was, I think, first of all, it set a very high bar for his education. He was learning Latin, probably honing his French with something perhaps akin to Parisian French, and being exposed to the arts, but obviously history and literature. But he also was invited to help the Jesuit priests with the vestments and decorating the altar for the high holidays and so on. So we think it was his first exposure to fine fabrics, and he always had a knack for. He was always interested in fabric, and he helped to kind of, I think, dress his sisters or fix up their hats if their hat wasn't right. He would sort of recast it and recraft it. But I think that time at St. Charles College as a teenager, 14, 15, 16, was extremely influential in his interest in fashion.
Now, he first gained fame in millinery because that was the era of the great feathered hat and the plume trade. And there's that wonderful line in Cole Porter's song, "You're the Top, You're a Bendel Bonnet." And that's a kind of immortality in itself, really.
Right, right.
And then we know it from Auntie Mame, Rosemary's Baby, Gossip Girl, Sex in the City. Bendel's just had a mystique.
It did. The hats alone, to your point, could have possibly cemented some sort of legacy for him, and certainly the Cole Porter lyric. But he quickly branched out to dresses and accessories and became a merchant more than a hat designer. You know, the hats put him on the map when he had a little hat shop on 9th Street, which originally I think was just to the trade, and then eventually was doing some retail business, and then he made a move and opened his first, but not his greatest, bigger clothing and hat store and accessories on Fifth Avenue between 43rd and 44th Streets in 1906. But hats got him going, but he really came into his own in importing French fashion and then copying French fashion with permission from the couturiers to do that. And then in just running a great store. And as you point out, it's a brand that far outlived Henry. It didn't go out of business until 2019.
Well, you really captured the essence of Bendel in the beautiful design of this book with the stripes that were so characteristic of this store. Florine Stadtheimer's wonderful Sunday sale at Bendel's. It's a lovely book. You can't resist it.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Tim Alice, whose beautiful new book is Henry Bendel and the Worlds He Fashioned. Tim, thank you so much. This book is such a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Walter Isaacson signs The Greatest Sentence Ever Written, Tuesday, December 2nd at 6 at Octavia Books. Photographer Philip Gould and writer Ben Sandmill discuss and sign Louisiana from the Sky, Wednesday, December 3rd at 6 at Octavia Books. Historian and author Catherine Carter will discuss and sign Churchill's Citadel, Chartwell and the Gatherings Before the Storm, Wednesday, December 3rd at 6 at the New Orleans Opera Guild, 2504 Britannia. Barbara Caver will discuss and sign A Little Piece of Cuba, A Journey to Become Cubana Americana, Thursday, December 4th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Alex Beard signs For the Birds, An Artist Aviary, Thursday, December 4th at 6 at Octavia Books. Tim Alice discusses and signs Henry Bendel and the Worlds He Fashioned, Thursday, December 4th at 6 at the Museum of the Southern Jewish Experience, 818 Howard Avenue. Now, coming up in December, 8 local authors of children's books will discuss and sign their work Tuesday, December 2nd at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. They are Gary Olipio, author of Craziest Cajun Football Tale, Shannon Kelly Atwater, author of Fado Doe, Adam Dennis, author of Gary and the Tooth Fairy and the Boy from the Swamp, Michelle Dumont, author of Phoebe Cakes and Friends, An Alphabet Tale, Learn Your ABCs, Maddie Hannon, author of Scrim on the Run, Dr. Alice Hoyt, author of Wally the Seafood Allergic Walrus, Anna Romano Johnson, author of Real River Rats, and Aaron Roven, author of The Little Bee Tree. The Friends of the New Orleans Public Library expands its big book sale this weekend at Algiers Regional Library, 3014 Holiday Drive. Friday, December 5th, they're open from 10 to 4, and Saturday, December 6th, from 10 to 3. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.